the 1830s, and this time not to England particularly, but to America. Many of you might have heard of this man. He's better known as D.L. Moody, but his name was Dwight Lyman Moody. He was actually born in Massachusetts in 1837, and he was born in the country. He lived in Northfield, sort of a small town, and he had a really, really tough childhood. His father died when he was 4 years old, and he was the sixth of eight children. His mother had just given birth to twins, and so she was left with her eight children, with the last two being newborns. And in those days, of course, she had no work, and she wasn't able work. And on top of that, when his father died, he actually left the family with a whole lot of debt. And so after the funeral, debt collectors came and sort of took everything, and they were really just left with an empty house and a roof over their head. And so Dwight grew up in a really poor household. They didn't have enough wood to have a fire in winter, and they depended on neighbours for food and things like that. And of course, his education suffered a lot because of that. He actually never finished fifth grade. That's all he went to. And he could hardly read. He could read, but not very fluently. And of course, his mother needed him to work. And so he was working at a very, very young age. But all of this never really stopped Moody. He was a very, people actually said of him, "No one can strap a saddle on that boy." Because he was energetic, he had a lot of energy and a lot of drive. He worked very hard, so he did stay out of trouble, but he really was known to be very headstrong. And he always had dreams. He thought that he could be bigger and better, and Northfield, this little country town, was too small for him. He wanted to go to the city. Now, he did have an uncle in the city. The nearest city was Boston, and he, in all his childhood years, he'd never been. He'd only sort of been in his country town of Northfield. But his uncle had a shoe shop in Boston, and Dwight was desperate to get out of his country life, and he wanted to start in the city. And so he begged his uncle, who visited him one day, for a job in his shoe shop. But his uncle looked at the 16-year-old D.L. Moody and was like, "No way. You don't know what you're doing. You've got no experience. You're so headstrong. I don't want responsibility of you." And so Dwight was a little bit discouraged by this. However, he wouldn't take no for an answer. And so, against his mother's wishes, he decided he would take the train and go to Boston himself. And he didn't need a job from his uncle. He would find something else. So this is what he did. And his older brother, who was very worried about him, gave him $5 and said, "Just stay safe, please." They were kind of worried about what he would end up doing. So he went to Boston and he stayed with another relative who was quite surprised to see that he'd come, and he thought that it would be easy. With that $5, he'd be able to last a few days and he'd find himself a job and everything would be good. But he didn't. He couldn't find a job. No one wanted to take him. He was a country boy. He had hardly any education, and people just felt like he wouldn't know what he's talking about. And so he ended up having to go to his uncle's shoe shop. And he turned up very apologetic and almost had to beg his uncle for a job. Well, his uncle was really angry and sort of said, I'm not taking responsibility of you, but he couldn't say no. Here he was, Dwight was already in Boston, had nothing, and he needed to do something, even if it was just for the sake of his sister. And so Uncle Samuel took on D.L. Moody, Dwight Moody. Not before grabbing him by the collar and saying, "You are not allowed to go out on the streets at night. You're going to stay in the boarding house that I pick, and I'm going to know all of your friends, and every Sunday on your day off, you are going to church and then Sunday school." Well, the 16-year-old Dwight Moody, that didn't thrill him. But because his uncle had given him this job, he had to oblige. And actually, he was quite a good boy and he kept to his word. And so he actually really did feel that this was the beginning of a great career. Even though he was in a little shoe shop selling leather shoes, he thought that this was the beginning of his fortune, and he would slowly, slowly earn the money, save every penny, and then he would be a millionaire. That was his dream. Now, actually, Dwight Moody was an excellent salesman. He was really, really good. In fact, his uncle actually caught him one day trying to sell shoes that were too small to a lady, and they didn't have her size, and he kept saying to her, but ma'am, why would you, just for the sake of your big feet, why would you let this go? You should just buy these shoes. It doesn't matter about your big feet. Anyway, his uncle was not impressed by his methods, but they did seem to work, and he was selling more shoes than any of the other people in the shop. One day, he was just out the back of the shop, and he noticed there was a man walking sort of up and down the street, and he kept sort of stopping, looking in, and then taking a few steps back, and then walking a bit again and looking in. And he was about to open the door, and then he couldn't, and then he was walking towards it again. And Dwight was thinking, what's he doing? You know, hang on, just adjust this. What's wrong with him? Why can't he just come in? And he watched for a bit, and then he looked a little closer, and he was like, oh no, that's my Sunday school teacher. And he looked again, and he thought, oh, what have I done? And he tried to think about last Sunday, which was just a few days ago, and he thought, what did I do? What did I say? So the thing is, you know, Dwight Moody he did promise to go to Sunday school, but his uncle had never said how he needed to behave in Sunday school, so he felt that it was his holiday, he could do what he liked in Sunday school, he didn't need to pay attention or anything like that. And so he did have quite a guilty conscience when he saw his Sunday school teacher hovering outside. But finally, Ed Kimball, the Sunday school teacher, did pluck up the courage to come into the shoe store. And he asked the clerk at the front, you know, is Dwight Moody here? And Dwight was in the back room, in the counting room where they had all the shoes stored. And he was hoping that the clerk might say no. But the clerk said, oh yes, he's in the back room. And so Ed Kimball went into the back room and he put his hand on Dwight's shoulder. And Dwight was feeling really awkward and said, ah, Mr. Kimball, maybe I could sell you some boots. And Ed said, no, I've not come here for shoes. And he lays his hand awkwardly on Dwight's shoulder and said, well, I know you haven't thought much of my Sunday school class. And to be very honest, I haven't thought much of having you in my Sunday school class. But I just need to know, do you believe in Jesus? And do you believe that Jesus died for you and for your sins? Now, this was really awkward. Dwight had never actually thought of God outside of Sunday. And here was his Sunday school teacher at his workplace talking to him about the Lord Jesus and his death and resurrection. And he even had his Bible open and was reading a passage. And Dwight felt really strange. But it was the first time that he actually realized that these things of God are real. They're not just for Sunday and tradition. They're real. And in that few moments of conversation where Ed was a bit shaky and trembly and nervous, Dwight realized that he needed to believe. And he said to Ed Kimball, you know what? I do believe. And I'm going to live like I believe it. And so Ed Kimball was feeling really, well, he felt a bit weird about the whole thing, but he really felt he needed to see Dwight that day. And so he left feeling a bit sort of red-faced and embarrassed. But when Dwight left that day, he was a changed man. And in that short conversation, he had come to know the Lord personally. Well, Moody's life completely changed. And it was very evident to everybody. He was so keen to share his new life with anyone and everyone who would listen to him. And he actually was attending a very, very traditional church where, people who were educated spoke about the Bible, not 18-year-old kids from the country who had no education whatsoever. And so when he hopped up in prayer meetings to share things or to kind of encourage people and so on, people didn't like it. And they sort of looked at him strangely. And it came to, there was a in a prayer meeting, he really wanted to share something. He'd realized something and he hopped up and said, "Everyone, I've just realized salvation, God's salvation is like shoes." Well, all these old ladies were horrified. This was outrageous. What is he talking about? Is he mad? Why doesn't someone make him sit down and silence him? But he just kept going. He said, "Yes, salvation is like shoes. You see, if the shoe's too tight, then your foot won't get in, will it? Well, if your foot's too big or if your pride's too big, then God's salvation won't fit it." And people didn't like his methods. They thought, "Why is he relating things of God with common things like shoes? That's outrageous." And an older Christian there said to Dwight, he said, "Boy, you will serve God best by keeping still and keeping that mouth shut." Anyway, Moody was not too discouraged by this, but the problem was the local church also were a lot of the customers at the shoe store. And soon Uncle Samuel started losing customers as all these old ladies said, "Well, I'm not buying shoes when you've got your nephew saying strange things on Sundays and in prayer meetings. I'm not going to that shop at all. I don't want to see him." And so suddenly Uncle Samuel was losing customers because of Dwight's outspokenness in these prayer meetings and so on. And so Uncle Samuel was furious, and although Dwight was his top salesman, they decided to part ways. So in 1856, when Dwight was 19 years old, he decided that Boston was too small for him anyway. He would make the next step up and go to Chicago. And he wrote to his mum, "You know, dear mother, don't worry, 1,000 miles ain't so far from Northfield. Well, if you don't think about it." So Dwight Moody found himself in Chicago, and now he did have experience. He did sell shoes, that was his job. And so he walked into another bigger shoe store, and soon he also was showing his great talent for selling shoes. And his boss took him aside after a while and said, "You know, with your skill and with your sense of business, you will make $100,000 before long." Now, $100,000 in those days was like saying being a millionaire today, because that was a lot of money back then. And this boss said, "You know, you work hard, you have good friends, you know, don't go to too many parties, save every penny, and I reckon you'll be a millionaire very, very soon." And Dwight took this to heart, and he thought, "I can do it. You know, I've dreamed of this, and I could make my fortune. And I'll be a millionaire, maybe within 5-10 years. And so he continued to work very hard. But on Sundays, he also still went to church. On one Sunday, he was walking through the sort of, the poorer area of Chicago. He was walking down North Wells Street. And there was a sign on outside a doorway, and this old sign with sort of dirt all over it said "Mission." And so he was quite excited about this. He thought, "Well, you know, I've never seen this place." And so he knocked on the door, and a man opened it who looked sort of grey and down. And, you know, Dwight said, "Oh, what is this place? I saw it's a mission." And the man said, "Yeah, it's a Sunday school." And Dwight said, "Oh, a Sunday school? Oh, fabulous. Well, you know what? I'm going to offer my services. I would love to come and help you and volunteer to be a Sunday school teacher." And he was expecting this man to light up and say, "Thank the Lord that you're here, Dwight Moody." But the man said, "Nah, no thanks." And Dwight said, "What? Don't you need teachers? Well, you know, I'm happy to. I love Sunday school because I was converted by my Sunday school teacher. He cared for me enough and he brought me to the Lord." And so this man said, "No, We don't need Sunday school teachers. We've got 16. We just don't have any kids. And Dwight said, what's wrong with you? This whole place is teeming with kids. I can see kids in doorways here. There's kids running along the street. And the man said, they won't come. They just won't come. We've got teachers. We don't need you to be a teacher. We need kids. And so Dwight was really confused about this. But the man said, you know what, since you're here, if you can come next week and bring your own class, I might consider you teaching. And Dwight said, deal. I will bring my own class, and then you will have a new Sunday school teacher. And so the next Sunday, he got up early and he walked through the streets. And it was a slum area. There were families packed in these tiny terrace houses. Kids were running around on the street everywhere. And nobody, it seemed, went to church. Those days, Sunday school was quite different to now. Sunday school was literally a school, and it was often for really poor kids who would never really get a chance at school. And it was a way of bringing them in, giving them a bit of an education, but also teaching them the Bible. And most of these poor families, very few of them even went to church. I mean, the adults didn't really go to church either. And so it was a way of really trying to witness to these disadvantaged areas. And so Dwight just went through the street, and he just talked to a couple of kids. They were throwing balls at each other, and he grabbed the ball in midair and he held it. And then the kids came and sort of gave us the ball. But then he told them, he said, I'll give you the best Sunday of your lives if you can just follow me, and you'll have the best time you've ever had. Never mind this silly ball. You won't need that again on a Sunday. That's not a Sunday ball anyway. And so soon he had 18 sweaty, smelly, loud, noisy boys running after him. And he knocked on the door of the mission, and the old tired man opened the door, and he looked as Dwight was there with 18 noisy boys behind him, all thinking that they were about to have the Sunday of their lives. And so began Dwight's work in Sunday school. Now, he broke his bargain that day. He said, you've got 16 teachers in there. How about you split these 18 amongst yourselves, and I'm going out for more kids. And so that's what he did. He gathered more and more children, and he had such an incredible gift with children that they really did flock to see him. Now, that was Sundays. But on Monday to Saturday, things were a little different. He was focused on his work. He had not forgotten his fortune. That 100,000, he still had that in his mind. And so, his first priority from Monday to Saturday was selling these shoes, and sell he did. He was soon so good that he was headhunted by a big shoe company called Henderson's. And Mr. Henderson himself met with Dwight Moody and said, you're good. You're so good, I'm going to promote you. You're not just going to be a shop salesman. You're going to travel around America, around the states around here, and you're going to sell our newest shoes. You're going to be like a top salesman. And I'm going to give you a salary and commission. And soon as he was doing the adding up, he thought, this 100,000, this is coming soon. Never mind 10 years. I'll be able, if I save, this is actually going to be a reality very soon. And Henderson promised him all of this, but then Henderson said, of course, you'll only be coming back to Chicago once a month. And Dwight said, well, what about once a week? And Henderson said, no, not possible. I'm not sending you back once a week. You're coming once a month at maybe once every 2 months or something, but not once a week, no way, no deal. And Dwight said, but I need to be back on Sunday. And Henderson said, what for? Why do you need to be back on Sunday? And he said, I teach a Sunday school class. By then, there were 300 kids in this mission. And the thought of just kind of abandoning that, it didn't sit well with him. And he actually really loved these kids. And the idea of just saying, bye, I won't see you until every so often, it didn't sit well. And Henderson couldn't understand. He just said, what are you doing? Are you throwing away this huge promotion for the sake of a slum kid Sunday school class? And Dwight kind of did feel that seemed a little bit silly, but he still didn't feel right about it. So he talked to a lot of people, and he got an advice from a friend who actually was an officer on the railways. And this friend happened to have one of these free rail pass things that could get you onto any train and would give you a free ticket from anywhere. And the friend said, you know what, Dwight Moody, why are you stressing about this? Look, you can do both. You can do your selling all across the country on Monday to Saturday, and then use my rail pass, and you can come back from wherever you are, and you can come and you can teach your class and then go back to your work on the other days. And Moody was so relieved. Finally, he'd got the solution. He would do both. And that 100,000 was very much just in sight. Well, I don't think most people could do both. It was probably only Moody who would be able to do both. He lived life at 100 miles an hour, and he made this routine, this crazy routine, work. Not only that, but his Sunday school was growing. It's huge now. It was so big that Abraham Lincoln, who was the new president, actually paid a visit because he'd heard that this mission had 1,000 children. And Dwight Moody and other teachers were teaching this massive Sunday school, bigger than anything Chicago had ever seen. Not only that, but how he did it, I don't know, but he had time to find a girlfriend, the lovely Emma. He was crazily busy, working Monday to Saturday, full, very, very full on a Sunday, but he loved it. And he felt that he could do both. And not only that, but towards the end of the year, Henderson called him in and said, your sales records are so good that next year I'm going to promote you. Your salary is going up. And if you can keep this sales record going, I will give you a bonus of $5,000. That was huge. And doing the sums, that $100,000 was only maybe a year away. It was so close. And at this age, Dwight Moody was only 22 years old. He would be a young millionaire in no time. That's how he was thinking. Well, he loved his life. It was going all brilliantly. 3 weeks later, Henderson dropped dead. Just died. And his whole business was dissolved overnight. All those promises of promotion, the 5,000, gone. Not only that, but Moody found himself unemployed. He now had nothing. This was a huge blow. And he had made plans. He had calculated everything. And now it was all in ruins. Well, it took a lot to get Moody down, but this really did get him down. And soon he found another job, but it was just an ordinary job in a shoe store. And, well, it was like he was starting back at the bottom of the ladder again, and he had a long way to climb. But he still held on to this idea that maybe, if he worked hard again, maybe in maybe a few more years, he would make his fortune. One day, he was in his shoe store, and an old man by the name of Mr. Hibbert came to call. Now, he was actually a Sunday school teacher that Dwight had worked with in the mission. And he came in, and Dwight looked at him and said, oh, Mr. Hibbert, you're not well. You know, what can I do for you? Mr. Hibbert said, I don't want shoes. And he was coughing, and when he coughed, well, Dwight could see there was blood on the handkerchief. And he knew that Hibbert was really, really, really sick. And Hibbert said, I've just come from the doctors. They've told me I don't have long to live. And I'm going to go and travel back to my family. They live in the countryside. I'm going to go there. And I know that I will die there. And I know I won't be ever coming back. But there's one thing that's troubling me. You know, my Sunday school class, all those teenage girls, they've been coming for years, but not one of them is truly saved. Not one of them really knows the Lord. I want to visit each girl individually and beg them to come to the Lord and believe in him. And Dwight, well, he was listening to this. And then Mr. Hibbert said, well, I want you to come with me, of course. You need to come and help me. And this was not really Moody's style. The idea of visiting these people personally, well, he felt really awkward. He said, well, I wouldn't know what to say to them. And going into their houses, it was one thing to teach big classes, but to actually visit each child, Moody felt very awkward, but of course he agreed. And so he and Mr. Hibbert, after work, they would travel to each individual girl's home. This was hugely confronting for Dwight. When he walked into some of those houses, you know, sometimes they were assaulted by the very drunk father. Sometimes they weren't allowed to come in. But Mr. Hibbert was so focused and very clear, and he got into every single house, and he sat down with those girls, and he spoke to them so directly and plainly and clearly. And Moody found it very hard to concentrate because he was looking at the terribly poor, shabby surrounds that these girls lived in. And he was really shocked by the condition of these families. But Hibbert actually asked Moody to pray for each of these girls. And Moody again felt very nervous doing that, but he did. And when he started to pray, he really felt that the Lord was there and was closer than he'd ever felt before. And almost all of those girls in Hibbert's Sunday school class were saved. They often ended in tears. And all of them gathered on the train, the platform, to see Mr. Hibbert off, and they knew it was the last time they would see him. And one girl, Peggy, she prayed for the first time, and she said, God, thank you for Mr. Hibbert. He told us about Jesus, and we won't forget what he said to us. The Lord was working in those young girls. But more than that, the Lord was working in Dwight Moody. For the first time, Moody saw up close what it is for God to transform lives. He saw God at work in people's lives, and people were completely changed. These girls were completely changed. And in those shabby homes that were drenched with beer and the smell of stinking garbage, those girls received the Lord despite their circumstances. And he saw God so vividly that after those few days of visiting, all that ambition, the dream of the 100,000, it just faded away. And actually, Dwight Moody suddenly looked on that dream for what it was. It was a giant trap. Now Moody realized that he had been trying to serve God and money, and these two things did not go together. He actually decided to leave his job as a shoe salesman. It was far too tempting for him. The money still had that, well, you know, it was tempting. And he left that job and he took up a little tiny room at the back of an old church. It was a sort of a small room, hardly a bedroom, but it was a room that was able to be rented. And he sort of said to the Lord, he said, Lord, I'm not educated. I can hardly read fluently. I didn't even finish fifth grade, but I can sell shoes. That's one thing I can do. So I'm going to give that gift to you and use me in some way, please. And so he settled in this tiny room and he started to be involved in the YMCA. Now, the YMCA originally was a Christian organization, a Young Men's Christian Association. And this was like a youth kind of group. And he started to be involved in this and he was all out again, full speed, running these prayer meetings and having groups and speaking. Of course, he was running his Sunday school. He was getting teachers. He was training teachers. And he was full-time working like this. And he was living in this tiny room. And Emma, when she first came to visit him in this tiny room, they were now engaged, she stepped in, and Moody was so happy. You know, he was full out for the Lord, and he was living in this tiny room, and so on. And when Emma came and visited him, she stepped into the room, and her first reaction was to burst into tears. It was just so awful. And she said, "How can you even live like this?" But Moody could, because he knew, finally, that what he was doing was right, and that the Lord was in it. And so he also started doing a whole lot of fundraising. This Sunday school was getting too big. They needed a huge space for it. You know, imagine 1,000 children. What are you going to do? Well, you need something huge. And so he started to fundraise and work with people. He contacted businesses, and this is where his salesmanship came in handy. And he managed to build these huge buildings. And of course now, you know, some of those teenagers were now adults. They were all like 18 years old, and they didn't want to leave Sunday school. So he also built this massive church, which became known as Illinois Street Church. It was so big. It was a massive auditorium. It could seat 3,000 people. And besides that was a huge hall, a Sunday school hall. And these buildings were packed. And Moody was speaking and preaching and running groups and prayer meetings and visiting people nonstop. In those days, they said of Moody that he was young, enthusiastic, impulsive, energetic, and he made a lot of mistakes. But there was one thing about Moody. He rarely made the same mistake twice. And that's because he was really teachable. Now, in all this busyness, he hadn't realized that his now wife, Emma, was actually quite sick. And she had been diagnosed with asthma, which was in those days it was quite a dangerous thing. And the doctor said to Moody, you need to get out of the middle of Chicago here. You need to maybe take a sea voyage somewhere and give her lots of sea air, and hopefully she can recover a little bit. And so Moody was forced to stop what he was doing and go on a voyage. And the first place he thought to go was England. He'd heard some things about England, and there were some people there that were, well, he'd heard a little bit about this man. He was German, he wasn't English, but he, from nothing, had built these huge orphanages, these massive places, without having any money of his own at all. And he really wanted to see this person to sort of ask, what was your secret? How did you fundraise? All of that kind of thing. And then he'd heard that there was a really, really good preacher who was making a big impact in England. And again, he wanted to hear him as well. And so they travelled, Emma and he, to England, where he first met the German man by the name of George Mueller. And there at Ashley Downs, looking at these huge orphanages that housed 1,000 orphans in England, he said, "Oh, Mr. Mueller, what's your secret? How did you do this? How did you build all of this?" And the quiet, precise German that was George Mueller waved him aside and said, "Oh, never mind about these buildings, Dwight Moody. It's not about what Dwight Moody can do for God. It's far more than that. It's what God can do for Dwight Moody." And so, with that ringing in his ears, Moody then went to an evening meeting where a man by the name of Charles Spurgeon was preaching. And again, in that series of meetings, Moody was so changed by what Spurgeon had said. But more than that, he went to a little prayer meeting where a man by the name, who's not as well known as the other two, his name is Henry Varley, he was speaking. He wasn't even speaking, he was just sharing. And there was one thing, one sentence that Varley said that burned on Dwight Moody's heart. It was this: "I tell you, the world has yet to see what God can do with one man wholly and fully committed to him." And Moody really remembered that. And he said, the man didn't say one educated man or one highly accomplished man or one very, very talented man or one biblical scholar of a man. He just said one man that's fully committed to God. And so Moody said to the Lord, "I want to be that one man. Work in me, change me. I want to be committed to you so you can work through me." And so when Moody came back to America many months later, he had a very changed attitude. But now it was, very, very busy. He was speaking not only in the Illinois Street Church with its thousands of people and the huge Sunday schools and so on, but he was also asked to speak elsewhere in other states of America, and he was often traveling. Emma found this very hard. They had now two small children, and she was often home alone, and he was often traveling on the road. And traveling was difficult in those days. It was horse and cart, or he was often on a donkey, actually, Moody was, and or by ship. So it was traveling was very difficult and dangerous in those days. But Moody, on one of these traveling trips, he met a man. Well, actually, he didn't meet him first. He heard him first. This man was called Ira Sankey. He was a really good singer. He heard him singing in the congregation. He could pick out his voice. And as they were sitting in this service, Moody was thinking, the cogs were turning, and he thought, I need to speak to that man. Oh, this would be a wonderful opportunity. You see, I would preach, and then he could sing the hymns. And together, we would be able to have these evangelical outreaches and reach more and more people. And so Moody rushed up to Ira Sankey at the end of this meeting and said, I heard your voice. You're a really good singer. How about you leave your home, come and live in Chicago with me, and together we will travel the country. You will sing, I will preach, and we can reach so many people. And Ira was like, hello, my name's Ira. What's your name? It was just Moody's way. He was very energetic and impulsive. But Ira and his wife did pray, to their credit. They did pray about this. And he really felt, Ira felt, that this really was from the Lord. And so they left their home state, moved to Chicago, and thus began an incredible partnership between these two families. Now, Moody was a dynamo, and I'm sort of skipping ahead a few years. With his ceaseless energy that he'd had from childhood, he was doing so much. He was preaching with such gusto. In fact, people often said he didn't preach at the pulpit. He pranced around the pulpit. He was just full of energy. And the other thing about Moody was his speaking was really, really different. It was, in those days, people who preached were educated, but Moody wasn't educated. He spoke really commonly. He often used funny stories and so on. And people really enjoyed his speaking. But of course, he also spoke with a lot of power, and people were very much moved by what he was saying. But in one series of meetings, he was surprised. He noticed these two old ladies sat in the front row every night. And they were evidently praying for him during the whole meeting. And so, at the end of the meeting, they would often come up to him and say, we prayed for you. And he would say, oh, well, thank you. But every night, the same thing. They would be sitting in the front, praying the whole time. And then they would say, we prayed for you. And so at the end of a few days, Moody went up to these two old ladies and said, why are you praying for me? Why don't you pray for the thousands of people here that they might hear the gospel and believe? And one of these old ladies said, well, because it's you that needs the power. You need special anointing by the Holy Spirit. And Moody's first thought was to be a bit put out by that. And he thought, well, I do have power. I've got a lot of experience. I know what I'm doing up here. And actually, I am quite a good speaker. But before all of that came out of his mouth, he stopped himself. And he realized that he didn't have the power. And he got on his knees and he said to these two ladies, can you please pray for me now? And they prayed for him and they asked the Lord to fill him and give him wisdom and the Holy Spirit. And after that time, Moody, when he got up from his knees, he was really changed. He realized that he'd really been depending on his own skills and he was holding on to his own abilities. And he really couldn't do that anymore. It was the Lord's work. Not Moody's. Now, after this experience, Moody's sermons were no different. He spoke in exactly the same way, but the man who delivered the sermons was very, very different. And many more people were converted because the Lord was starting to really work. Now, one Sunday in 1871, Moody was doing his usual thing. His morning routine was to speak to thousands of people in the street church. Then he ran off to Sunday school, and he ran Sunday school, and he met with the teachers there. And then after that, he had a quick supper, and then he was ready to speak again to another huge congregation in the evening at the Illinois Street Church. But when he was speaking that evening, it was really, well, he was quite distracted. He noticed that the congregation was very distracted. People were looking around, people were looking at each other, people were not focused. And then he found it hard, and he could hear in the background these sirens going off. And he ended up ending really abruptly. And he'd forgotten what he was going to say. And he normally ended with calling people who wanted to be saved to come out the front. And he completely forgot to do that, which was very unusual for him. And he ended up thinking, what's wrong with me? Why am I like this? And, you know, then he said to Ira Sankey at the end, he said, well, you know, there's always next Sunday. I won't worry too much. But when they stepped out of the building that night, the sky had a strange red glow. And they looked, and it certainly looked like fire. But there was a river in Chicago, so they knew that it must be very, very far away. But at midnight, there was a banging on the door, because the fire that was only in the distance had spread with huge speed. And it was so close that they were evacuating the whole city of Chicago. And so Moody woke all the kids, and Emma got all everything, and they tried to grab a few things to run out. In those days, of course, remember, no cars, so they had to be on horse and cart to get away from the city. And soon when they stepped onto the street, you know, there was smoke everywhere, they couldn't see, everyone was running, and not only that, but that wall of flame, they could see it coming visibly closer, and people were running in all directions, and there was a smell of burning flesh. And Moody just, they just got into a cart and they just got out of there with the clothes on their back. After a few days, once the fire had been put out, they were allowed back into the city. And Moody walked through the streets and he came back to his house. Well, where his house was, it was just a pile of rubble. There was nothing left at all. Then he went around the corner and he saw the Illinois Street Church, that huge auditorium with 3,000 people, that could seat 3,000 people, and it was a pile of rubble. That Sunday school hall, there was just a bit of plumbing stuck up. Nothing was left at all. The whole of Chicago was actually in ruins from that fire. Sankey and his wife had lost everything as well. They were devastated. They took a train back to Pennsylvania and to stay with family. And Moody and Emma had nothing as well. And Moody, again, it took a lot to get him down, but this was a huge blow. Everything that he had done for the Lord was a pile of rubble now. And it was like all the Lord's work, he thought, had burnt to the ground. And he got on his knees and he tried to pray. It was very hard for him to pray, but he did. And as he prayed, he realized, what am I thinking? What do you mean the Lord's work has burnt to the ground? The building wasn't the Lord's work. The people are the Lord's work. And he hopped up off his knees and he said, well, I'm alive, Emma's alive, our children are alive, all these people are alive. We've just lost the building, but that wasn't God's work. That was never God's work. And with that and with this renewed vigor, he jumped up, got tables together, organized blankets and clothing and food, and he started distributing physical needs, meeting the physical needs of all the people in the neighborhood. And not only that, but he realized that this fire that had swept through the whole of Chicago and so many people had lost everything meant that people had faced death, faced their own mortality for the first time, and so many more people wanted to hear the gospel. Now, Moody was very much used by the Lord during this time. And there was one time where he was actually invited, because he was quite prominent in America. But now, you know, people in England had heard of him, and that was saying something. And so he was actually invited by three Englishmen. They were friends, probably businessmen. They were going to send money over for the fair and organised big evangelical meetings, gospel meetings in London, huge meetings. That was the plan. And so Moody was waiting for this, and all the plans, the idea had been sort of arranged. But then he never really heard from his three friends, and the money never arrived. And Sankey said, well, obviously they don't want us to come. I mean, that's pretty plain. And Moody thought, I think we need to go to England. And, Sankey thought, that's ridiculous. We hardly have enough money. We might be able to scrape enough money to get over to England, but what are we going to do when we're there? It's not really feasible. But Moody really felt that they needed to go to England, even though they hadn't really heard from these three friends. So they managed to scrape the money together after a few months and wrote a letter to these three men and said, this is the date we're coming, we're on this ship, and we're going to be sailing to this place, and we'll probably stay in this town. And so, they did that, and travel in those days was very, very difficult. But they managed to get on the ship and get there and so on, and they booked into this cheap hotel. And there at the cheap hotel, there was a letter waiting for them. And Moody opened the letter with great excitement, thinking, oh, it's all going to be arranged. And his face fell. The letter simply said, it was actually a telegram, it said that his first friend had died 9 months ago, the second friend had died 6 months ago, and the last friend had died 4 months ago. All three friends had died. And nothing had been arranged. No one even knew they were coming. No one knew they were there. There was no meetings in London. No wonder they hadn't sent the money. And so Moody and Sankey just sat in their room in this hotel thinking, what are we doing here? What have we done? All those weeks and months of travelling, and here we are, and we can't even stay in this hotel for a week. And then Moody was straightening out his jacket, and was putting it in the cupboard, and she pulled out a crumpled letter and she handed it to Moody and said, what's this? And Moody opened it and was like, oh yes, I got this just before forgotten all about it. And he opened it, and it was a little letter from a man by the name of George Bennett. He was part of the YMCA in York, at the top of England. And so this Mr. Bennett had sort of said, if you're passing through, we know you're coming to England, please could you pay a visit to our YMCA in York? And so Moody said, this is it. We are meant to be here. This is where we're going. We need to go to York. And so he sent a telegram to Mr. Bennett and said, we're coming. Tomorrow, we're going to be there. Well, Mr. Bennett in York, he was a chemist. He was just a tired, weak, timid old man, and he got this telegram, and he freaked out. He thought, what? No, I'm not ready. But Moody and Sankey were coming. And Mr. Bennett was so appalled and embarrassed when they arrived, and he'd heard in the meantime that Moody and Sankey would preach to thousands of people in this huge auditorium. And so he was so embarrassed when he showed them his tiny little room on top of his chemist shop, which was their YMCA. And when he had arranged the first meeting, when only 8 people turned up, he was feeling really, he wished he could disappear. But Moody and Sankey were not deterred by the fact that they only had 8 people sitting in front of them. In fact, Sankey sang like there were 3,000. And Moody preached to each individual. The next day, there were 12 people that came. And they preached with the same gusto, knowing that this was where the Lord wanted them to be. But then, after a few weeks, people started to hear about these two crazy Americans. They probably heard Sankey more than they heard him actually singing. And so soon that room was way too small, and they started to have huge meetings. And in York, hundreds and hundreds of people were saved at that time. But, it was tough in England, and there were many obstacles. You see, they didn't like Moody at all. Firstly, he was uneducated. Secondly, he was American, and he had a terrible American accent. Thirdly, he had very bad grammar. And he, not only that, but somebody found out that he used to be a shoe salesman. And so the news at a field day. They wrote really nasty articles mocking this big American guy and this singer, and they wrote about his bad grammar and his silly talk, and the way he put things was just so un-British. And Moody was quite discouraged by this. But not discouraged enough. When somebody actually came up to him, might have been a reporter or somebody like that, someone came up to him and said, how can you think, speak for the Lord with such bad grammar? Well, Moody's reply was pretty simple. He said, "Yes, sir, I know I make mistakes, but look here, friend, you've got grammar enough. What are you doing to serve the master with it?" And that was Moody through and through. So despite all these ups and downs, the Lord really continued to use him. And he really, that line that was told to him by Henry Varley, the world has yet to see what God can do with one man who is wholly and fully committed to him. He held on to that because he knew that he was just one ordinary man, but God was at work. Now, the Lord really honoured Moody's commitment. And in that time in England, starting with 8 people in York, he ended up travelling to Scotland. He spoke to 30,000 people in Glasgow, in Edinburgh. They had huge tents to try and house people. He then spoke in Liverpool, again in York. He went down to London, and thousands upon thousands of people heard him speak. In fact, in history, they say that England has never been so stirred for the Lord from that time since, and probably the time before would be John Wesley. So many, many people came to know the Lord through Moody during that time. In fact, there was he actually even held special meetings just for kids. And on one occasion in Liverpool, 14,000 children came to one of his Sunday school meetings, his special meetings for kids. Well, back in America, he really loved children. And he wasn't happy just with Sunday school. He decided that he would build schools. And he actually built 4 schools dedicated to really poor kids who really couldn't afford going to college and things like that. And these schools also taught the Bible. And those schools actually still exist today. There's a college in Northfield, a boys' one and a girls' one. And this was part of Moody's work as well. By the time he was an elderly man, 5,000 kids had been through some of these schools. People laughed at him, of course, because he himself hadn't really been to school, but yet here he was building schools. By his 50s, Moody was actually really unwell. The exertion of the travel and the constant preaching had taken a toll on his heart. And, the doctor said to him, "Well, how many times do you preach a week? 3, 4? And Moody laughed at him and said, "4? I preach an average of 15 times a week." And the doctor said, "Well, you're silly. Look, you're going to die at the pulpit." And Moody sort of thought, "Well, good. That's going to be how it is." He didn't really want to slow down at all. But his children, who were now adults, did want him to slow down. And Emma wanted him to slow down. And then he did have this inkling, this thought that maybe he should slow down and he should stop all of this travel and this preaching that he was doing and the Sunday schools and everything. Now, on his way back from England one time, he was actually with his 22-year-old son, William. And he was thinking about this very thing. He was actually seasick in his cabin. When William suddenly rushed in, and he hadn't heard it, but there was this massive roar and crash. And Moody didn't know what had happened. Of course, he was down in his cabin. And William rushed in and said, "Get out, get out. We need to go up on the deck." And when he went up on the deck with all the other passengers who were running out of the cabins, the captain said that there'd been an accident. A small explosion in the engine room had caused a leak or something. And the ship, with this slow leak, was slowly sinking. And they were trying to do something, but they really needed to be rescued. And so the passengers were frantic. They were all told to go into the dining room and wait. They were going to send off flares, and hopefully there would be another ship coming by, and maybe they would be rescued. And they were hoping that, because they only had maybe 24 hours before the ship went under. And so the passengers were all so scared. Well, Moody, well, firstly, he was actually all right because the ship had stopped moving, so his seasickness was better. And the second thing was he had a captive audience. So with the permission from the captain, he led all the passengers in song, in hymns, and he spoke to them about eternity and death. And, well, I think most of those people were very happy to have Moody on board that day. The captain sent off these flares, and there was another ship that saw them and turned and was starting to come. But just as the ship was close enough to send the rescue boats, the sea went wild. And it was so stormy and dark, because it was night now, that they couldn't send these rescue boats. And Moody, you know, he did think about death, not his own particularly, but he was thinking about leaving his wife, his son, his daughter, and he didn't know what the Lord wanted. Was that the end? Was that going to be the end? He was booked to preach at the Chicago World Fair, the biggest event yet. But would it be heaven or would it be Chicago? He didn't know. But he had peace, and he had peace in the words, "Your will be done." And so he rested in that. Now, the people were begging him. They said, "What are we going to do? You know, the rescue's right there, but we can't even send the boats." And so Moody led all of the passengers and said, "Get on your knees and we'll pray to the Lord and ask him to make the sea like glass." And just as dawn came, they looked out and the sea just was like glass. You could just see your reflection in it completely. And so the Lord had heard them. And of course, the rescue boats were able to be sent. And it was a good thing too, because by then, the dining room floor was on a massive slant like this. So all the passengers and crew were rescued that day, and Moody knew from the Lord that his work was not yet finished, and there would be no slowing down for him. Now in Chicago, that time, after he had been on this ship, when he arrived in Chicago, he preached at this world fair, and it was so big that he actually, it was a famous circus, this is a traveling circus, it was so huge, and Moody said to the circus master, he said, "I want to rent your tent." And the man said, "My tent seats 20,000 people, what are you going to rent my tent for?" And Moody said, "Well, for a gospel meeting." And the man roared with laughter and he said, "You think you can fill my circus tent with a Bible thing, some sort of Bible meeting?" And Moody said, "Yes, I do." And the man laughed and laughed, but he said, "All right, whatever, you know, it's your loss." And so Moody rented this massive circus tent. In the morning he would have the gospel meeting, then in the evening it would be the circus. And then the circus master was so shocked as day after day the tent was full to bursting. In fact, there were people standing in the aisles. And he couldn't believe it. And then when evening came, with his great circus, it wasn't even half full. And he was so, he couldn't work this out. So he said to Moody, "You know what, I'll do you a deal. How about you join my circus?" Now Moody politely declined. However, he did feel quite flattered about this offer. Moody's very last campaign was in Kansas, and there he spoke to so many thousands and thousands of people. And when he returned home, he was absolutely and utterly exhausted. And his wife cared for him, but he never really regained his energy. And he knew by then that his time had come. He knew that his work had been done here on earth. And as he lay on his bed, very, very ill and sick, he knew that it was his last few hours. And he said to his family, "This is my triumph. This is my coronation day. I've been looking forward to it for years." And with that, the uneducated shoe salesman who wholeheartedly committed his life and his gifts to the Lord Jesus stepped into eternity. Dwight Moody served his generation. They say 100 million people heard him over America and also Europe. And among those, a vast majority were children. And perhaps, you know, perhaps we can actually say, or at least catch a glimpse of the fact that the world has at least caught a glimpse of what God can do with a man that is wholly and fully committed to him. Now, often with these biographies, you know, we often hear stories of great people. And sometimes it can feel so removed from us. You know, how likely are we to be standing in front of 20 or 30,000 people in London and huge cities like that? It seems very far removed from us. But I want to end with something that Dwight Moody himself said. A good many are kept out of the service of Christ, deprived of the luxury of working for God, because they are trying to do some great thing. Let us be willing to do the little things. And let us remember that nothing is small in which God is the source. Thank you.